Okay. So, first step towards saving a marriage. What do we need to do first, my friend?
Yeah, and I think probably the most important part is get calm. And it might sound like a little bit overrated or a little simple, like too simplistic. Oh, just get calm. And please don't hear what we're not saying. We're not saying that facetiously, but it's really a point of like, it's going to be very difficult to work on anything, never mind saving your marriage, if you have tons of anxiety. You've got depression, you've got anger, you've got all this stuff happening, all these emotions happening all at once. Because typically, if we're super emotional, we're going to react in the moment. So something triggers, our spouse says something we don't like, or they do something that's pushing us away, and we react in the moment. And typically, that causes more pushes. It doesn't bring us together. It's actually something that causes more divide. And so when we say get calm, it's so that we can think clearly, we can see objectively what is going on around us, what our spouse is saying, what they're actually saying. Because when we're not calm and we're anxious and we're all over the show, it becomes really difficult to really focus in and zone in on certain aspects. So getting calm absolutely is vital. But I don't know, what else would you add to that? Like being calm.
Sometimes we're faced with situations in life that are just so panic inducing. And that panic works against you in ways that you almost can't overstate what a drain it is on your resources to be under anxiety, fear, things of that nature. So the, you know, I'm a big, I'm kind of a parable guy. So I really, like to do this. The way I process it is if you think about going down to the gym, you know, there's a whole bunch of strong people down at the gym. They can pick up and move a lot of weight, right? But there's a limit to what everybody can move. And when they get to that limit, they all do the same thing. They grimace and they get all sweaty and they grit their teeth and they go and they push out like one more rep, right? And then they have to set the weight down, not because they're weak, but because they're out of energy. If they do not set the weight down, it's not a question of if they're going to drop the weight. They're going to drop it on themselves and hurt themselves and probably people around them. So the wisdom is to set the thing down and return your body to a state of calm, peace, restfulness. You have to do that. That doesn't make you weak. That makes you a person. Now, emotionally, the same process is true. When you're dealing with something that's hard, your spouse has said they're going to leave you, or you've discovered an affair, or you found out that there's a bunch of credit cards you weren't aware of, something like that. Well, now you're in panic mode. Oh my goodness, I have to solve this issue. And if you work yourself up and you don't allow yourself to rest, it's not a question of if you're going to emotionally run out of energy and get a bunch of stuff wrong. That will happen. And so you have to set the weight down and rest yourself. You have to return yourself to a state of calm, which doesn't mean you have to just ignore all the problems that are around you. It just means don't let this one issue, or maybe it's a combination of issues, but don't let this one area of your life steal your energy away from everything else. And if I could push that metaphor a little bit further, if you are thinking about the problems in your life, you're going to work and you're thinking about them, and you're trying to go to church and you're thinking about them and all that stuff. Well, that's kind of like if I'm waiting in line for the bench press at the gym and I'm holding a couple of weights up over my head. By the time I get up to actually do the exercise, I've pre-stressed my muscles out. I'm already exhausted. And so I'm going to run out of energy really super early. So by allowing myself to exist in a calm state, I actually am more effective at doing the exercise or dealing with the hard thing in my life emotionally. Roland, what do you think about that illustration?
I love it. And like the first thing that comes to my mind emotionally is if I'm going to be giving into my relationship, if I'm going to be giving into my marriage, or even just giving into myself, it has to come from a full cup. Can't pour from an empty cup. And so if I'm looking at reconciling with my wife or my spouse, like I really want to be at my best all the time. And so it really does start with me. Like I've got to get calm. I can't control my spouse. I can't control what they're doing, what they're saying, their behavior, but I have to look inward and get me right first, because if I'm in a good space or a better space, it's easier for me to now pour into every other detail. And just a practical example. So for me, when I was wanting out, it was really all the conflicting emotions, the fear of, okay, is this even going to work? The fear of, okay, if I'd lose my kids, what is going to happen? If I carry on this. So, I mean, there's a ton of what ifs, like all this stuff happening all at one time. I fell into a deep depression. I didn't feel like getting up. I had no motivation to go to work. And because of the depression and the anxiety I was experiencing all the time, my brain never shut off. So I barely slept. And so eventually I started getting so exhausted, it made me snappy with the kids. And like, there's so many other things that degraded over time because I wasn't in a good space. And so at some point I had to go, you know what, I need to get control of this because nothing's happening. I don't feel like working on things with my wife, Tammy. I don't even feel like getting up and doing the basic chores. And so that anxiety, the fear, the lack of peace just kept me basically stuck.
Yeah.
Until one point I was like, you know what, like I said, I have to get myself out of this space. Because if anything had to happen, I need to start with me. And I hated the way I was feeling anyway. So it was like, okay, what do I need to do? I need to work on myself. And so I need to take care of me, because if I can take care of me, maybe I can take care of everything else and everyone else around me as well. Mm. And so it was a case, okay, I need to start working on my past. I need to get started. And for anyone that's brand new, that's never heard that term, it's not food, all right? It's not a garage pie. We would say, okay, physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually, how am I working on myself? How am I taking care of myself in every single one of those areas so that I can be the best version of myself? And in a sense, like Jared was saying, is fill my cup, be in the best place possible to be able to work on everything else that might come our way. Yeah. So yeah, I love that illustration.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's think about some of the practical things you would do to calm down. I think one thing that people need to understand is that we should accept things we cannot change, but acceptance doesn't mean that you have to like something. And it doesn't mean you have to endorse. I could accept that a friend of mine has a drug addiction, but I don't have to get him drugs. I don't have to endorse what he does. So when people are dealing with acceptance as a coach, I often tell them, don't look for a way out of your circumstances, look for a way through them. Again, like I said, I'm a big parable guy. So if somebody diagnosed me with some, I don't know, let's say it's cancer, I'm diagnosed with cancer and I go, oh no, I don't like having cancer. I don't want this, but I can't see it on myself. So maybe I could just ignore it. Like, that's not going to work well for me at all. That's going to put me in a terrible position. Being calm by ignoring something, not going to be helpful. But if I accept that I have this condition, well, now I can ask the question, what should I do about it? And the pathway forward, it may feel very hard. There's some radiation over here I could try. There's some chemicals. Maybe there's a surgery. And I go, well, none of that stuff sounds like something I want to do. I don't want to do it, but I accept that one of those pathways is going to be the best pathway forward for me. And there's going to be pain and suffering involved. There will be hardship. But if I want to survive, I have to walk down a path. And that's how I can stay calm and accept something hard at the same time. Acceptance does not mean I have to enjoy myself while I'm going down that hard road. That's not what acceptance is. I go back to what I said earlier. Don't look for a way out. Look for a way through your hard circumstance, because there probably is no easy answer, but there probably are practices that you can do that would move you closer to some good resolution. And one of those practices is going to be your pies, like Roald talked about earlier. What about you, Roald? How do you help your clients calm down?
Just tell them, calm down.
Yeah, that just works every time.
No, you know, and I'm glad you asked that, because again, we understand like many of you are coming from different backgrounds, maybe even different countries, different cultures. So we approach it very holistically, like, okay, what are you experiencing right now? What are the emotions you're going through right now? So we help you unpack some of that, but also then steer you in the direction of like, okay, this is something that could help you. And often it starts with something, you know, we think like we've got to do all these big things. And if you hang around with Marriage Helper for any amount of time, we will tell you it doesn't have to be like, oh, now I've got to go train at the gym for 2 hours a day and all that kind of stuff. We would say, just start with what you can, what is realistic and attainable for you right now, something that you can actually measure. And so we would start there, setting small goals that you can look forward to. Because often when we get in this place of anxiety, or even like when I was in that depression and just feeling stuck, I had no motivation to help me go forward. Mm. And so naturally my brain started just looking at all the stuff that went wrong, all the stuff in the past. And so I needed to get out of that funk. And the best way to do that is to get a goal in front of you. If I can set something in front of me, however big or small that is, and I can be motivated to work towards that, that helps me to keep moving forward. And interestingly, the closer people get to a goal or achieving a goal, the more motivated they become. And so that's one way we typically would as a coaches, and each coach might have a slightly different view on that, but we ultimately want to help you set some realistic goals that you know you can work towards actively, whether that's 5 minutes a day or 2 minutes a day, having something that motivates you, encourages you, just lifts you up a bit mm-hmm. and gets you focusing on the right stuff versus on all the stuff that you can't control. It shifts your focus onto the things that you can control. And that could be as simple as just eating. A lot of clients come to us anxious. I can't eat. I just don't have an appetite. Okay, that's maybe a good place to begin. Let's start with at least trying to have one meal a day, whatever.
Yeah.
And we'll work with you. You really set the pace on this, but we're helping you there, guide you through some of these processes. But it could be sleeping, it could be exercise, it could be going to church, it could be whatever. But just having something different to focus on other than the crisis you're feeling right now typically helps us calm down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Goals as motivation, 100%. You know, we do actually have in our membership, it's relatively new, we have the Calm Toolkit.
Yeah.
And it's part of a whole series of toolkits that's going to come out. I don't have hard ETAs for you, but we will release them soon. There's going to be a Clarity Toolkit and a Push-Pull Toolkit that will be coming actually quite soon. So it's a really good time to join membership. I was going to say, one of the things that causes people to get sort of messed up in their calmness, they can't remain calm, has to do with the way they think about their situation. So I think that's a pretty good segue. Step two of the process is get clarity. So what does it mean to feel clarity about your marriage situation?
Yeah, and I think that's a good question, Jared. And just so for everyone, like, we're giving you snapshots of things. Like, we don't have enough time to unpack everything the toolkits we have within the membership actually have, but these are just some snapshots. But I think getting clarity is a couple of things. It's clarity on my emotions. What am I actually feeling? Not just like all these random things, is narrowing it down and going, okay, this is why I'm feeling what I'm feeling. This is exactly in that moment why I'm feeling what I'm feeling. It could be, okay, what is my spouse actually saying? What is my spouse actually doing? So a lot of times in these situations, because of the emotions that can be all over the show, circumstances can be quite tough. There's a whole lot of assumptions that are made. There's a whole lot of speculation. Now, those things, again, I like my little phrases as well, but assumptions are like termites because they start eating away at the foundations. And a lot of those assumptions we make are not based on truth or reality or, you know, fact. And so getting clarity in a marriage is like, okay, we know exactly what's going on. We know exactly what each other is doing. So it's largely built on trust as well. But overall, we're clear on what our spouse is feeling or saying and doing, but I'm also clear on what I'm feeling, saying, and doing. And so it just brings us stability. I think it builds a stronger foundation. If we're just assuming things and guessing and basing our thoughts and our decisions on speculation, that often leads us down paths that we don't want to go down.
That's right.
So that's why it's closely linked to getting calm, because when we're calmer, we tend to think more rationally. We can think through processes. We can look for more accurate facts rather than just guessing and assuming and speculating, which only brings more anxiety because it's not founded in truth or fact.
Yeah. Very often the people that I work with deal with a condition that we call fear-based control. I so fear that C will happen that I'm going to do B if I see A. And they think that A leads to B leads to C. And so just to make that more understandable, I see that my spouse has started to take their phone with them when they go in to take a shower, or they've been putting their phone face down on their side of the table, and I don't see their screen anymore. I fear C that they're hiding something from me. So what I start doing is I start becoming hyper aware of where their phone's at all time. I start doing B. I start asking them, what are you doing, or who are you looking at, or who are you talking to, or whatever. And what happens is I end up creating an anxious state in myself, but then I end up pushing away my spouse. It actually creates more emotional distance when that kind of stuff starts to happen. And then I end up, because I start to feel the distance, I end up not calm again. And so clients will often move. They'll get some calmness. They'll start to think about their situation. They'll think about it too much, and then everything collapses, and they go back down to needing to get calm again. So do you find that that's generally true in your situation or in your practice as well?
Yeah, you know, I think the minute we allow our thoughts to just run wild and we're all over the show and that fear kicks in, like, I think fear always keeps us stuck because it's based on unknowns. It's always based on something in the future that we have no control over. And so the way I like to see it, and this is not a religious statement, but instead of having fear, what would happen if we would act out of faith that things could still work out for the best? So faith is something that keeps us moving forward. It's a trust that, yeah, I'm not blindly just going into what I'm going into, but I'm also not going to let fear keep me stuck in that space. But yeah, fear is probably a big thing we see. And yeah, all the unknowns, again, it's the uncontrollable that we fear. And that's why getting clarity, specifics, takes away some of that fear.
Yeah. You know, just as an aside, when I was going through my marriage crisis, one of the things that I did, I called it name the lie, say the truth. And I would write on a little card sort of the things that I was thinking about when my emotions would be bad. So I might write, I'm angry today because such and such happened, and it means this, and that's not fair, and this is the outcome. And really, that stuff isn't totally true. So that's why I called it name the lie, say the truth. Once I had written down my thoughts, if there was any element in what I was thinking whatsoever that I could say is not 100% accurate, I would write the word lie next to that thing. And on the back of the card, I would write a short statement of truth to counteract that lie. And that is one of the ways that I calmed myself down. And it's one of the ways I got clarity. So I later learned from a therapist friend that that is called cognitive behavioral restructuring. But I like my name for it better. Name the lie, say the truth. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think on that note, for me, gaining clarity in our situation is because I had such a negative view of all the stuff I told myself about Tammy. Not that they were true, but because I had this negative perception that she was this and she never did that and she always did. A lot of it was made up in my own mind, and not a lot of it was actually, some of it had truth, but a lot of it was not true. It was just my negative view of her. And so a big part of my decision that, and that helped me get clarity, but also get calm, like you say, is I started seeing her and I decided I'm going to see her as a 10 out of 10. So I'm going to start each day fresh. And we're going to see each other and I'm going to see her differently, think of her differently, look for more positives. And we know Dr. John Gottman talks a lot about this, where he says you got to outweigh every negative with like at least 5 positives. And so I had read that and heard that previously. And so I was like, what if I did that? What if I just thought and looked at more of the positives rather than focus on just the negative? What would happen? And what it did is over time, it not just calmed me down, but it changed my perception of Tammy. But also then I started seeing things clearly, because that kind of lens of the negativity stopped me from seeing what was really happening. And so the more I calmed down, the more clarity I got, the more I could get rid of that negative mindset, the more I could see the change that Tammy was making.
Mm.
The changes in her language, the changes in her behavior, all these things started filtering. And so, yeah, like getting calm, getting clarity, vital. Like whatever that looks like, our coaches and the toolkits will help you really flesh this out more. But that's just a snapshot so far of what I think we both experienced differently, but similar. Yes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. When I got clarity about the fact that I would be okay staying in the relationship or leaving, when I was in a place where I knew I could stay and I could make things good, that helped me be a lot calmer, especially around my wife, Jen, helped me be a lot calmer around her. And that calmness created an environment where she then became more calm and she had more clarity. And we step forward. It's almost like it's like walking. It's like one leg helps the other leg step forward, which helps the other leg step forward, which helps the other leg step forward. And I think that's a really good segue into where do we go? Once we have calm and clarity, what are we trying to accomplish? And that's step 3 of the 7-step process. I want to stop pushing things in the wrong direction, and I want to start pulling things in the right direction. I want to draw people to me. I don't want to push them away. Hmm. So what do you think about that? How would you describe pushes and pulls?
Yeah. In the simplest form, and you'll hear this, that we say this a lot around Marriage Helper, but in the simplest form is a push is anything that I do that actually creates a negative emotion in my spouse. So essentially really pushes them away from me, versus the opposite, which is what we actually want, is creating a pull, something mm-hmm. that actually evokes a positive emotion in my spouse. And so either I'm going to be pushing her away or I'm going to be drawing her in. And so let me give you a quick example of a push and a pull, short one. So I'm a stickler for time. I grew up, my dad was like, if you're 10 minutes early, you're already late. And like he would turn, I knew this because I went with him to his work often. If a sales rep was there like 1 minute late and they didn't let him know, this is before cell phones, like he would just turn them away. He's like, you're 1 minute late. You're wasting my time. Come back another day. So that's how I grew up. Time is a thing.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I'm early always. So even before this, I was like, guys, when are we starting? But anyway, so for Tammy and the rest of the family, that's not how they grew up. So time is really not an issue for them. But for me, it feels disrespectful. And so if they dawdle and they take their time and we need to be there, for me, it's a push. It evokes a negative emotion in me because I feel like we're going to be disrespecting our host, whoever that is. Okay. Now, obviously, we've remedied this over time and I'm much calmer with it. And like, I don't freak out like I used to, but that would be a push for me. It evokes a negative emotion. Even now, I don't like being late. So if they dawdle and struggle, I do feel some of those negative emotions come up, right? But we've remedied that as we went along. A pull. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to brag about what I do, but I'm going to brag about what Tammy does. But I spend, like Jared, we spend our time in these 4 walls a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Tammy will often just come through the door here and just bring me a coffee, bring me a snack and say, like, I love you. And, you know, is everything okay? And that just makes me feel, man, she likes me. She loves me. Mm-hmm. She cares for me. And that for me is a big pull towards her. I want to get closer to her. So these are very simple examples. And I mean, there's hundreds and thousands, there's different ones. But for me, those are 2 things that just, I think, illustrate the point. Being late, it's a push. Evokes a negative emotion in me. Tammy coming in here, loving on me, caring on me, checking on me is a big pull for me towards her. But then I think, Jared, you can maybe touch on outside pulls and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, you know, we like to break things down into very easy to digest pieces of information, but they're backed by huge amounts of research. So here's a way you can think about your relationship. There exists inside your marriage right now, there exists some pushes and some pulls. Regardless of who you are, there exists both of those. Outside of your marriage, there exists some pushes and some pulls. And the trick is, I want to create as many pulls inside of my marriage and eliminate as many pushes as I can. The stuff that happens outside of my marriage, I may not have control over it, but nevertheless, where I can control it, I want to eliminate as many of the pulls outside of my marriage and assist the pushes. So what do I mean by that? Back when I was the reluctant spouse, there were pushes that existed inside of my marriage. Things that I didn't like that made me want to be less involved in the relationship. And at the same time, there were pulls outside of my marriage. So there was the idea of living on my own, living somewhere that was more downtown, that had more people around it, things like that. There was just an idea that was attractive to me that made me want to be there more. But then there were also some pushes that existed outside of my marriage. So things like I would have disappointed, you know, my parents, I think, if I had moved away. I would have violated my own religious beliefs if I would have divorced, things like that. Those were things that kind of made leaving less attractive, right? And then inside of the marriage, there were pulls. So there were things that Jen did. She was an extremely, I mean, she took a lot of good care of herself. She's a really pretty lady. She's very kind and she's very smart and all that stuff. So those kind of things, she also became a very calm, gentle person during the time of our in-house separation, more or less. So those were things that made me want to stay. And so I got into this situation where I was being pushed and pulled in different directions. And for me, that was a very exhausting feeling to be in. But ultimately what happened is the number of pulls that existed inside of my marriage were greater and better than the pulls that existed outside of my marriage. And so therefore our marriage was restored. Now, since our marriage has been restored, we have continued to increase the pulls. As things stand right now today, my desire to go live on my own, you know, someplace in the city, someplace with really good internet and easy access to pizza, you know, like that desire didn't leave me. But in terms of how strong it is, it's much, much, much weaker than my desire to stay with Jen. So over time, I've been pulled toward her even more and even more and even more. And so everybody listening to this webinar here today, I want you to understand there is no ceiling on how good your relationship can be. And as long as you're aware of this process that we're talking about, you can actually cooperate with the rules of the relationship on purpose to make your situation better and better and better year after year. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, and just thinking like when we talk about pushes and pulls, you'll see if you guys get into the toolkits and anything we talk about, if you could imagine a huge tapestry, there's like a golden thread that will run through everything we talk about, mm-hmm. whether it's smart contact, getting calm, getting clarity, whether it's pies, whether it's anything. And that golden thread is pushes and pulls, because everything we do, everything we say is either going to evoke a positive emotion in our spouse or a negative. And so obviously, like I said, we're just giving you a snapshot now, but you'll see it, as you dive deeper into any of the material, everything has got a push or a pull. Mm-hmm. And that concept is we want to, in a nutshell, we want to stop doing the things that are pushing our spouse away. And so you can see now we go back to getting calm, because if I'm calm, I'm generally not reacting. I'm not saying things and doing things that are going to push my spouse away. If I've got clarity and I'm not making assumptions, then I can base my thoughts and my actions on facts as well. So now I'm thinking more rationally. I'm not just reacting again to falses and lies and all those kind of things and pushing my spouse away. And then in the pushes and pulls, when I'm working on my pies, I start creating an influence. So instead of doing all these things that I used to do in the past that pushed my spouse away, I can now start creating pulls. Now, there's hundreds of different options here. But Jade, maybe I think just a question for you, like you mentioned it earlier, but acceptance is a huge part, and acceptance is a massive pull.
Yeah.
So the goal is we want to stop doing the things that push our spouse away, start creating the things that create pulls that draw them back towards us. And that doesn't mean we're ever going to be perfect. And I see a lot of folks just in the chat, you know, kind of being harsh on yourself. Like, I've done all of this. I've said all of this. And we get it. We've been on that side of the table. Like, we did some stuff and I've done some stuff that I definitely am not proud of.
Yeah.
But we can either see that as failure that keeps us stuck. And we just, that's it. We kind of give up and we go, like, there's nothing else I can do. I'm just going to wait for everything to fall apart. Or I can take that, and instead of seeing it as failure, I can see it as feedback received to do the next right thing. And this is always an opportunity to grow, to be better, to be different. And as we grow and mature, man, those pulls will come naturally. But Jared, acceptance, one of the biggest pulls.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So as I'm unpacking this thing about acceptance, after this, we'll probably take some questions from the audience. So if you have a particular questions about calming, clarity, or pushes and pulls, put them in the Q&A box so that we'll be able to find them. And then after this, we'll start talking about those. So acceptance, the reason it's such a strong pull. Let me go back to just a short story again. Let's say that let's say that I grew up in a home where this is not true, but just as a, you know, a make-believe story, let's say I grew up in a home where we just didn't have a lot of money, and you know, things were just really tight, and you know, my shoes had a hole in it for like a year before I was able to replace them and stuff like that. So that maybe that's my background, and maybe my wife's background is she grew up in, you know, upper middle class, not necessarily you know, affluent, but with plenty of resources. And so when her and I get married to each other, we have some sort of different ways we process money, right? And here's an example of how acceptance can be an important thing to think about. So let's say I'm working and working and working super hard, and my wife comes to me and she says, "Hey, Jared, you're working so many hours that the kids and I hardly ever get a chance to see you, and that's really making us upset. What's the deal?" And I start to unpack with her. I start to share some of my innermost struggles. And I say something like this. I say, "You know, when I was growing up, we just didn't have a lot. And so now that I am an adult and I have kids of my own, I just don't feel comfortable sitting at home when I could be out earning money. Like, I need my bank account to have enough zeros in it before I can feel comfortable." Now, if my wife in that circumstance, if she's not careful, she might do something that really, really pushes me away. She might not accept me. So she might say something like this: "Oh my goodness, come on. We made plenty of money last year. I think that you would just rather be off playing with your work friends rather than being here in this house with me, helping me raise these kids. I think that you couldn't possibly be worried about money because I'm not. We make more money now than my parents ever did, and they did okay. So I don't believe you." You know, maybe she's not saying it in those words, but that's the message. "I don't believe you. I don't believe that that's what you're struggling with." And as soon as that happens, I'm not being accepted. So what do I do? Well, I go, "Well, revealing that innermost struggle didn't work out very well for me. So now I don't feel calm enough I'm no longer comfortable sharing those things inside of me, my innermost secrets with my wife, because she doesn't get me. And can you see how that causes an emotional divide to start forming in a relationship? Now it's almost an innocuous thing that happens. Oh, come on. We made plenty of money last year. You just stop working so much. Just get with it, man. Now, what should have happened instead? Here's a different way that they could have processed that. The wife could have said, wow, you know what? That really helps me understand where you're coming from. I accept you, but I disagree with you about what you're doing about it. But let's you and I work together. You know, I can accept that you have some hangups around money. So how about for the next, 60 days, maybe, you know, we haven't had to live off of a written budget for a little while, but maybe let's start doing that. And then you can see that we're putting money aside and we can lower the amount of hours you work. Or I'll tell you what, you and me together, you go work as many hours as you can for the next 60 days. I'll save as much money as I can for the next 60 days. We'll put it in a jar under the bed and then we'll lower your hours. If it looks like we have to dip into the jar, well, that's what it's there for. If it looks like the jar is going to run out, we can put your hours back up. But I want to lower your hours, but in such a way that I don't make you feel uncomfortable, right? Now that's acceptance without agreement. Can you understand that the issue of processing money had the potential to push us apart or to pull us back together, right? If I'm calm about it, if I'm accepting, if I'm thinking clearly, that struggle, which is always going to be struggles, but that struggle is going to draw us closer together over a period of time. And it will actually make us more emotionally connected to each other. We can cooperate more in our relationship when things like that are happening. So that's how acceptance is working on the ground in your relationship right now. There are all kinds. I mean, there are ways that we accept each other and ways we don't accept each other. But as long as we're thinking clearly and we're being a calm, safe place for our spouse, we won't get it perfect because nobody's perfect, but it will tend toward better relationship growth.
Hey, thanks so much for watching today's video. If you have any questions, feel free to leave them down in the comments. And if you want to learn more about the 7 steps, you can click this playlist right here. We'll see you in the next video.